to myself, Max McGillivray from Beanstalk. I'm very proud today to be having our second food service broadcast in association with Peter Backman and powered by Total Produce Food Service. So, Peter, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everybody. You'll be hearing quite a lot from me over the next hour or so. So I won't say anything more right now. I'll hand back to Max and he can ask the questions.
I'm going to embarrass Peter because I always like doing this bit because he's such a modest individual. Peter is an expert commentator on the structure and dynamics of the food service sector and its supply chain in the UK and internationally. If you've been involved in the food sector, I'm sure that you will have either seen his weekly reports or he's speaking at various conferences again in the UK or internationally. He's been involved as a researcher, consultant within the sector for over 30 years, blending his knowledge with a deep understanding of the trends, key players and challenges of organisations with an interest in food service. And if you're watching this on the record, have a look at the bottom because we'll tag Peter's website so you can have a look at some of the work that he's done and also catch up with the likes of his weekly reports. Peter and I were very keen to set this food service broadcast up because, What a time to set it up, in that we were very keen to create the conversation around food service and not just be part of it. We had a very successful first broadcast with Peter. They're amazing, weren't they? Tony Reynolds of the Reynolds Group and James Lipscomb of the Chesterford Group.
That's correct.
So we got a very big food service fresh produce player, and James runs this amazing fish and chip empire. I don't think he would like me to use the word, but it's something like 24 fish and chip shops. And it's fascinating hearing from both of them as to how they developed their business as they went through this incredible oddity that is 2020. But for this broadcast, we wanted to major on what we've learned from the lockdown periods and how the sector can now positively bounce back from Christmas 2020 and beyond. And to assist us with that, we've brought in two other experts over and above Peter, who've really got their feet on the ground as to what is going on within their specific areas of food service. And Peter's very kindly going to interview them, Peter, but it's probably too strong a word. It's to have a long form conversation, have a conversation with them for all of us to learn from them as to what they've learned in the role per se up to present day, but also what they've learned in 2020 and how they've managed to develop their businesses. So Peter, give us a little bit more of a background on yourself over and above my glitzy start for you, please.
Well, you've done it. That's it. I know about food service and the whole thing from Wormwood Scrubs to the Ritz and the supply chain and with an international competence. I'm doing some work in India at the moment and France. I'm looking particularly at restaurant delivery because that prior to COVID and during COVID has been disrupting the market. So there are all sorts of different aspects of food service that really are worth noting and really interest me. And one thing that always strikes me about this industry is it's full of nice people. You've got to be nice in order to work in the food service sector because it's all about hospitality. If you don't have that gene, then you find it much more difficult because at heart, it's all about making people feel pleasant. So, and that's one reason why I'm heavily involved in this sector.
Peter, because as we spoke before, you could have gone off in any different direction, couldn't you? Especially like on a scientific basis. But your love is the sector and the people within it.
Yes. I sort of fell into it, but I quickly realised that yes, it is. It's full of nice people. I trained as a scientist, which I can't say they're not nice people. They tend to be a bit more buttoned up than people. Yep. Food service sector, and that was fine, but working in a laboratory with test tubes I realized wasn't for me. Far better to smell the food and eat it.
Well said. My father was a doctor of biochemistry, so I've obviously missed the genes in the respect of the intelligence, but yes, I couldn't I needed to do something more practical. So Peter, before we get into it, because I've got a big question to ask of you. We must just remember that we wouldn't be able to be running this broadcast if it wasn't for our partners for today, Total Produce. Total Produce PLC, if you're not aware of them, is today one of the world's largest and most accomplished fresh produce producers and providers. They're local at heart, global by nature, and they operate out of, would you believe, 30 countries while serving many more. Their industry-leading vertical integrated supply chain extends across the globe, incorporating over 260 facilities. So they've got 260 standalone businesses on a global basis, including farms, vessels, manufacturing facilities, cold storage, warehousing and pack housing. And what's great about them as a business is that their range extends from the more familiar to the truly exotic within fresh produce. But they want to be a local, seen as a local business. So we're very proud to have them again partnering us for this second broadcast. And if you have a look at the Total Produce website, you'll be able to see your local regional supplier and to see whether you can engage with them. So Peter, how much of a hound dog day is to today? Doesn't today feel a bit like March 23rd when we went into first lockdown? We got all the conversations about London potentially going into tier three and two-thirds of the country going into tier three. We just seem to be going round and round in circles. What do you think? Do you think we're in this constant groundhog day, and are we ever going to get out of it, especially in the respect of food service?
Well, yeah, I mean, if you look at it particularly from a food service perspective, I guess... it's not quite the same as March the 23rd, because we've learnt, we've operated through the first lockdown, which sort of ended in June. Then things started opening up, and there was a certain amount of confidence in the market. Then the autumn started hitting, then the numbers started rising. So then we had lockdown in November. And now in this month, we've, for two-thirds of the country, have got full lockdown in terms of the food service market in particular, by which I mean you basically can't go and eat out. You can have food delivered, but you can't eat out, or you can go and take away food. And the rest of the country can still serve food, except for a tiny portion of the market, which is more or less open. The rest of the country has to stop serving food at 11 o'clock in the evening. So there are restrictions. So this is different, both on the basis that we've had experience and that we are the food service market is one of those markets that has been highlighted for being locked down. If you talk from this position about the future, then we're in for a very tricky time, in my view, still for the next few months. How long this lockdown lasts, I don't know. I've been hearing about, you know, going on into January and even beyond, which doesn't strike me as being beyond the bounds of possibility. And at the same time, we're starting to get the vaccines coming along. So we've got a situation where we're being assailed by growing numbers of how the COVID is hitting us. More hospitalizations, regrettably more deaths. And at the same time, we've got increased hope, more people being vaccinated against the virus. So these two things are sort of working against each other. When do they cross over? In other words, when do we sort of effectively get out of this dreadful period? Well, if I had to put money on it, and bearing in mind, like everybody else, I've been turned into an expert epidemiologist in the last few months. So, I'm talking as if I really know what's going on. But my view is late spring we'll start to feel quite comfortable, but things won't be getting back to normal growth until the autumn.
Yeah, I agree, Peter. So what I'm picking up is on a business perspective is that a number of business organizations are saying that at the end of Q1, Q2 of next year, we're going to see this uptick because prior to the pandemic, there was nothing fundamentally wrong with the UK economy. So if we can, if the vaccine comes through, we will see a rapid return to normal in the respect of businesses. So we will see an uptick. And I suppose it's a the pertinent element on the likes of food services is the light at the end of the tunnel in the short term, and perhaps the long term, as we were just discussing in our green room before we went live, is that how businesses and the takeout market may be a direction and avenue that they're going to go into. And I suppose that comes back to our topic title about what have we learned from these lockdown periods and how the sector can now positively bounce back from Christmas 2000 and beyond. Peter, would it be an idea if we invite our experts in so we could just find out who they are? And then if you'd like to take it away then, Peter. And so shall we go with George first after we got them to introduce themselves and we can hear about their businesses? Nelfar, would you like to come in as well?
Sure, yeah.
George, let's just start with you. Could you give us a little bit of a background as to who you are? Who is the handsome man that is George Beach?
Oh, that's so kind, Max. Hello, everybody. My name's George Beach. I run a small but growing family business based in Warwickshire. We're farmers and growers as our sort of base. And then we've developed the brand that you can see behind me, Mudwalls Follow the Flavour, over the last 10 years into quite an exciting project. We supply a number of retailers, wholesalers, a small amount of restaurants. And we also supply into those that do supply restaurants and various food service businesses. And our scope is a range of fresh produce through to fine foods.
Fantastic. Thank you, George. Nelfar, from your front room, from your dining room at home, please could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your fantastic business?
Hello, my name is Nelfar Khan. I'm from Zabardast. And Zabardast is an Indian wrap company serving Indian food with the biryanis and curries, etc. We have a hub and spoke model. We've got 8 stores, some in London, some in suburbs as well. And we produce everything centrally and distribute out to the stores. And primarily it was lunchtime business, but it's the evening business and breakfast as well.
Fantastic. And everyone, you must look at both of the websites, and if you're looking at the record or listening on the podcast, have a look at the websites, because they're two brilliant websites, and you'll find out so much more about their businesses over and above the chat that Peter's going to have with them. So Peter, would you like to have a conversation with George so we can find out more about George from your perspective, please, Peter? And Nelfar, if you and I, if we just duck out and we'll let the gentleman get on with it.
Hello, Peter.
Hi, George. So you've explained a little bit about your business. We've got about 7 or 8 minutes, I guess, to just investigate just a little bit more. Can you very briefly tell me, you know, where it comes from, how it was set up, that sort of thing?
Yeah, very much so. So I started my career working for Tesco's, learning all about fresh produce. And I was very interested in the quality of products. So I spent quite a lot of time looking at quality and had a great opportunity, thanks to my job at Tesco, to visit many, many farms of fresh produce around the country and further afield. Carried on my career through coming out of Tesco, working in supply chain from all angles, mainly bringing fresh fruit into the UK and spreading fruit from around the UK farmers to various companies. My business sort of grew and grew in the form of fresh, but then I realized that actually beyond fresh fruit and vegetables, there's some absolutely fantastic producers of fine foods. So here we are today supplying a range of fine foods as well as fresh produce to quite a wide range of markets. The base of the business, as I said earlier, is a farm in Warwickshire. So we know all about farming and growing. So we have good empathy with those, that end of the market, as well as understanding how to get the product from the field to the plate.
Great. So roughly what sort of size is the business? Give me some measure.
Okay, well, the farm itself is a modest 250-acre fruit and vegetable farm, which has been in my father's control for many, many years. We've sort of grown the business from a very small enterprise that I decided to set up on my own 10 years ago. We're now sort of heading towards a double-figure million turnover, and have great plans to expand that further.
Great. So I just wonder if we can turn the clock back to the beginning part of the year, and if you can sort of revisit that, and what did the world feel like for you at that particular time?
Okay, so we're talking about March, April time. So if we go right to the beginning, you know, went into January ready with our sleeves rolled up for a sort of reasonably good step up in growth. We did our budgeting and our forecasting for a reasonable growth, but not too aggressive. And then, you know, as we all well know, things started to change, and we all started to feel the uncertainty, I guess, of what the business is going to look like. We've been very fortunate in our business that sort of the biggest part of the business was very focused on retail and convenience retail. So although we have customers in the food service world, we were very fortunate that we had a foot in the camp of retail. We could see very, very quickly that the lockdowns, the worries, the panics were meaning that people were not going into restaurants, not going into major retailers. And actually that local convenience store was the busy one. So we had a sort of forecast of a plan that we were going to be supplying a number of these independent and groups of small convenience stores, and suddenly realized that actually what we were doing was a sort of niche, high-end level of product with interesting and different products. But very quickly, we started to find ourselves being asked to get into the volume main sort of lines, the simple lines, the cucumbers, the lettuce, all those things that suddenly became very difficult to find just because there was chaos. There was chaos everywhere. So we realized that actually the volume of that product that was destined for food service was being sort of held up in cold stores and warehouses with no real home. However, the problem was that all of that product was all in effect a bulk format, in a format suitable for chefs, not suitable for retailers. So we found ourselves communicating to some of the large food service companies that ended up having more stock than they had sales. Unfortunately, we were very lucky to turn that stock into retailable stock. So loose product we pre-packed, we had to change some of the SKU sizes to fit some of the products. So actually, I guess we came with a little white flag waving to say, do you know what, if you can't sell that to the restaurants, I think we've got a place we can put that into retail. So for me, that opened a whole scope of opportunity and hopefully did sort of help a number of those that were not as lucky as we were.
I guess it's... correct, you know, put me right if it isn't, to refer to your business as a sort of a family business, although not a tiny.
No, very much our business has been born on a family business. My father has been the grower, and I was always very much more interested in marketing, and then the upshot is that we ended up working together. So he would grow the product in effect and I would sell it. So we absolutely have been born from a family business, but because of the way we've been fortunate to build the business, we are growing. But our values and our men, you know, our values and the way we work in the business is very, very much on a sort of very close family way. As we grow, we have to become a little bit more corporate and understand how you have to be in a larger company. And in the last few months, we have taken the company to another level, and we have merged into another bigger business, and that means that we have to function differently, but our values definitely do not change.
So it in a nutshell, during that difficult period, it was a family pulling together, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was very, very much like that. I have two young sons, who one's at university studying agricultural engineering, and the other one was just sort of coming out of his travel period and actually decided to come home rather than take his travels further. And as a family, we pulled together, and we did actually have a period of time when we were realizing that our business is growing and we were being quite successful. And I sat back and thought, you know what? We need to share some of this success. And there's a huge amount of people out there, the vulnerables, the not so well off, those losing their jobs, those being furloughed, those that couldn't get out into town and do shopping. So my two sons helped me, and we pulled together huge amounts of packages and parcels. And we did a great job of delivering little friendly gift parcels to a number of the vulnerable and not so well off. So I felt really proud that those two came back home. One drove the van, one did the packing. And yeah, we pulled together and just did what good families do, and realized that, yeah, we're doing quite well, but we need to help those that are not.
Very important values. George, can I ask you to hide yourself, and I'll ask Niloufar to come into the room, and
we can carry
on our chat. Hi, Niloufar.
Hello, Peter.
So I'm going to broadly ask you sort of similar background questions, if I may.
Sure.
Just give me a little bit of an idea about how Zabadast arrived in the world.
Right. So in 2013, when the world was again changing, and a lot of different way of people eating habits were coming on board, we decided to launch an Indian wrap company. So where there's a participation of the customer, so customer can customize their own bread and then salad and then the sauces, and then we toast and away they go. So we started that with one store up in Waterloo, and very quickly it just took off from there. But having said that, prior to that, I have had a restaurant since 2003. And so we had some old homemade recipes that we still use till today. And the whole idea was to bring what we eat at home, to bring it onto the market, so that Indian food is eaten in a different light as well, different manner. And started at lunchtime. And now, of course, we have products and offers for the evening and the breakfast.
Incidentally, anybody listening who wants to eat at Zabadast, I can really recommend the food. So find one and eat there. But Niloufar, how big is Zabadast, or what, if we go, you know, however you want to measure it, how many stores have you got, that sort of thing?
So we've got one central kitchen, CPU, and then we've got eight stores. And in fact, the last one opened during this COVID period as well, in August. And so currently we have eight and a CPU, and it's a sub 5 million turnover.
And they're all located in London?
So they are, Greater London as well. So the furthest out is Bluewater Shopping Centre, which is in Kent, but otherwise it's London, and then near Caterham and Croydon, Canary Wharf, Clerkenwell, Bankside, Waterloo.
Mm. And so it, again, like I said to George, if we can just sort of transport ourselves back to January, February of this year, what was the world looking like for you?
Well, Peter, the whole of 2019, once we had tried and tested for a few years our offer, we had great, great plans to go national and international. And I say we had, I mean, we still have. But again, as a small business, we had to pivot towards survival, and survival not just of ourselves and a family, but survival of the business, the whole Zabadast family, i.e. the team and suppliers, et cetera, et cetera. So what we had those plans, and we were in conversations with some absolutely great partners, and we still are. But then came March 23rd, and very quickly we were wondering what to do. But very quickly, we had to change and navigate through the troubled waters. And I'm very happy to say that we're still alive and well and surviving, and not just on the business front, but health-wise on a family personal front as well, touch wood.
Yeah, I mean, you've mentioned family a couple of times, and I had a word George about it as well. So yours is very much a family business, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So it's my husband and myself, and my sons have been brought up with us working. And my husband is part-time because he has he's a technologist and he's got other interests. So mainly myself, but a very much family, yes. And our eldest son comes in and out, but they all have their own careers, but they're all there to support mom.
Yes. So if we look back over the last few months, has the dreadful circumstances we've been in, has it influenced the way that you look at the world of business or the wider world?
Yes, it has, Peter, in the sense that I think it's reinforced our thinking that we should all be working with each other rather than just for ourselves. And having sat back all through those April, May and June months when we were all struggling, and fortunately, we were very fortunate to have landed some NHS contracts where that gave us some space to rethink and recalibrate our bandwidth and our minds. And so we said, yes, we have to expand and we have to help each other, but we have to work with each other rather than just work for ourselves. And our model changed slightly. Rather than just having London-centric stores, we've started opening in suburbs as well. And within the lockdown, we were able to open one in August.
Yes, I mean, I think it's quite... quite important that businesses like yours have been able, or been first of all willing and then able to think strategically, i.e. let's open another store during this period. And I think that that must be an important consideration in, I guess, for any business.
Yes, it is. It is very, very important consideration. But then, because bearing in mind, we still have all those rental debts, etc., just rent mainly, that government has not done anything about to help so far. So those will come in 2021, 22 and beyond. So the businesses are having conversations with the landlords, etc. Fortunately, we are moving in the right direction, but we have to think strategically. We can't just, what we've built up, we can't let it go. Although it is tough, and the mindset themselves, we have to think about that, look, this is what's happening to us, but then we are still far better off than many, many, many others. And we can't give up. We can't give up for the sake of ourselves and for the sake of the whole Zabardast team as well.
Well, maybe we can come on to this later on when we meet up in the bigger room with Max and George. But it seems to me that there are a number of themes have come through from what we've been talking about. First of all, there's the importance of family. Secondly, caring for employees and caring for other people, which I think is a core value for people in the food service industry, other industries as well, but particularly for the food service industry. And it's easy, I think, to forget that in the hurly-burly of just driving forward and trying to get business and so on. People are important, aren't they?
People are very important. Without people, we're nothing. No, we just can't do this ourselves. And people are important. And then don't forget that those people are not just the names on their payroll, etc. They have got families themselves, and they have got people they might be servicing and helping, not just here, but abroad, etc. as well. And in UK. So, okay, you can put them on furlough, but for a short period of time. But then you have to innovate, and the innovation has to come from up top. They need to be guided. They need to be given that vision. They need to be told that, yes, it's okay, it's going to be fine. And we are fortunate also, Peter, that we have been speaking about, I mean, I'll tell you that we've been looking at the central, changing our CPU, central processing manufacturing unit, for 8-9 months now. And in February, we were going to sign contract, but then everything happened. But we're very fortunate that we did sign and the fit out has started. We signed about 4 weeks ago, fit out started. And in January, hopefully, we shall be moving to our new unit and opening another one in February, a small suburban unit.
And what does the CPU, operation of the CPU, actually mean for your business?
So what that means is it opens up huge number of opportunities, i.e. for the expansion beyond 2021. It also will be creating more jobs as well. And it's given us opportunity to get the teams together to innovate and pivot ourselves for a home delivery service, which is what we've been focusing on as well, because our customers are not coming. We've always been customer centric. So customers are not coming to us, we will go to the customers. And that's why we have focused on the home delivery. And that's why the suburban Zabardusts are popping up, because our customers are living in suburbs. So we've come to them, not in Canary Wharf or London. So central unit will now give us opportunity to go up to 60 or so Zabardusts.
That's fantastic. Hope for the future then. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe we'll invite George and Max back into the room, and we can open up a bit more of a discussion. First of all, I'm hoping this will be a bit of a... it's not just going to be a question of me asking questions and other people answering them, but maybe we can have a bit of a cross conversation going on as well, if there are points of interest. But let me just start by posing the question, particularly to Niloufar and George. What have the last 9 months or so taught you? What lessons have you learned, or a lesson that you've learned?
I'll have a go at answering that. I think one of the lessons is that we can do a lot more than we ever thought we could do. We can be a lot more efficient than ever we thought we could be. The pressure of the whole scenario with whatever we're doing, it has been quite immense. And I think that in any business, not just our own, it's amazing what you can do under pressure. And I think that's one of the lessons. And with everybody now working from home, and the whole change is making us all think much, much more about where we spend our time. But I think one of the biggest lessons for me really is that we really can do some stuff if we try. Mm. Mm.
Yeah. And I would 100% agree with that. I would say that it's restored the faith in humanity, in the sense that, you know, human beings are so strong, and when you put your mind to it, there are so many things you can think outside the box and really get going. That was one thing. Another thing is that local communities are just so important, whether it's from support point of view, whether it's marketing point of view, whether it's any other just living point of view. I found that local community is something which is extremely important.
Mm.
Hey, Peter, can I just cut across you? Because I just had a really interesting question on from a contact on WhatsApp, and I'm going to ask all three of you the same question. But for George and Niloufar, can I just have a one-word answer? George, did you ever think about giving up this year?
No.
Niloufar?
No.
Peter? No. Peter, with your client base, you know, you've got an extensive client base. Have you seen this resilience all the way through? Or let's be realistic, have some people fallen by the way and look to do other things because it's just been so emotional and so financially draining on them?
I've seen an awful lot of resilience. I know a lot of people who have regrettably failed, but I don't think any of them have failed through lack of a desire, lack of will, or anything like that. It's the money, basically. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I've seen. So yeah, I mean, this notion of resilience, I think, has been very important throughout the sector.
Can I just say something?
Yes, of course.
What I would say there, Max, is also that once there is an entrepreneurism inside a person, the circumstances may make it very tough, and then you may have to stop, but then it won't go away from within you. You will pop up back again. You will definitely come back again. That's what I would say.
Mm. George, would you agree?
Yeah, wholeheartedly. I just think that actually the amount of effort that not just in our entrepreneurialism, but within the teams, you know, I think people have recognized, particularly in our world, how difficult it is for a lot of friends and family. So it just sort of makes you get grip and really get stuck in. You know, we've just been talking as a team about our holidays and how many holidays we haven't had and how much extra work people have done. And, you know, I am so pleased with the sort of general feeling from the teams about, you know, we've just got to knuckle down and do it, which it really does help us. Yeah, it's been very good.
And Peter, don't you think that both of these individuals, especially Niloufar, are actually creating a revolution? I've learned so much from today, and I'll see if I can try and articulate it. If you remember back to our parents' generation, we had nothing like drive-through McDonald's, nothing like drive-through Costa coffees, nothing like out-of-town shopping centres. Now we have, and there's now a revolution being created on the restaurant scene that we don't want to go out, but we still want to eat. So as Niloufar said, the food's got to come to us. I'm fascinated by Niloufar, the expression I've always picked up is the dark store. So it's a bit like Tesco's having a dark store for all the online orders, and I picked up that there are more restaurants going down that way. You seem to have been an innovator in the first place. Have already created your what did you call it again? Your CPU.
Yes, that's right. The hub of cooking. Yeah.
Can I pick up on that, because I just talk about delivery in general. You mentioned, Niloufar, before that delivery was something that you were working towards. We hear stories about commission rates and not knowing who the customer is and so on. Either despite that, you're moving ahead or you're finding ways around it.
Yeah, so that's a very good point. Yes, so the commission rates of these different aggregators are really, really crippling, especially when we know the margins are very tight in the food business, so and the home delivery business. So we have done and addressed that is to have our own e-commerce system as well as using the aggregators. And within the aggregators, the other thing we are trying and testing is using our own delivery drivers. So that halves the commission rates as well. But coming back to the dark store, I personally, it's all good and fine having dark store, but I love the whole reason why we got into the food business was to be able to see people, talk to people, touch people, have the community. So eventually, we would have combination of both. I don't think we should at all have completely dark store and boarded up high streets. Not at all. It will reform, it will innovate, it will change, but we should not go away from having the either coffee house or restaurants or pubs, etc., but where the people can come in.
But don't you think? Sorry.
It's all right, Peter. No, go on.
Now, I was going to say, don't you think that people will naturally create their own needs and solutions for hospitality? Things will close down, but they will come back up again.
I think what's going to happen is that inevitably, as we've just been talking about, people, you have to take things to people because they can't get to the restaurant and they're not allowed to go to the restaurant and so on. And I think what's going to happen is that will... inevitably, all being well, we get the vaccines going and everyone starts to come back. But I think actually there's going to be a sudden surge once we are able to come back. And I think those restaurants that can and are able to open again have got to probably rethink the offer in terms of the way that you are the sort of experience that you have. I think this sort of combination of retail and restaurant, lack of activity in the high street, all these different things that are going on. I think what we're going to see over the next year or two is a new style of high street, a new way of shopping. There's no doubt online shopping and something that we've got heavily involved in. We've now set up our own partnership to supply fresh produce, fresh meat and fresh fish to the home. And I no doubt that is going to grow. That's going to continue to grow. And it will only grow with those that do a good job. What we have seen is a lot of food service companies inevitably change their business from being a typical supplier into a restaurant, and they've managed to bring together some fantastic food box offers, of which some have been great, some have been successful, and unfortunately some of them have fallen apart because the whole structure of that business is massively different and there's a massive cost difference. So I think online shopping for great food has a long life ahead of it. I think that possibly a combination of those doing online food shopping should consolidate and probably will inevitably link with good restaurants. And I see some great synergies between what we're doing, delivering great food to the home. I think there will be synergies with us and some great restaurants. I think we can combine our working relationships and probably offer a service to help Nifa the same way that you're having to do it yourself. I think there's a future where businesses like ours can probably help do that. And then I see the actual retail environment being different. You know, we've seen the Costas and the Pret-a-Mangers and all those sort of things. They've been fabulous, but I see it as a different sort of model going forward. I can see the whole sort of part shopping, part eating environment that sort of encourages you to eat with us today, but also take something home the same for tomorrow. And I see that growing.
Can I just make a point about the delivery service? Because again, I'm learning so much from this. You mentioned about the, well, I've got to say it, so on your behalf, so the scandalous prices that the delivery firms charge. If you look at the likes of Rightmove in the estate agency sector, I think it was in 2018, they turned over 160 million in gross sales and they made 120 million gross profit. Because they managed to capture the market and the estate agency sector was too slow to react. It almost feels like if it's not controlled, if the likes of yourself are not being disruptive and doing what you're doing and going to the consumer direct, that you're going to have this, the sector's going to have the same issue, that you're going to have these middlemen who are going to take you by hostage because it's the only way that you can get to the consumer. So for you to be disruptive and set up your own fleet of vehicles and go direct and look to use that community support, especially because it's completely genuine. But yeah, it would seem a bit of a worry that those delivery firms potentially we'll just look to ride this and get a stranglehold on that delivery sector. What would you think?
Well, I would say I'll give you an example and give you a little scenario, really, that for Zabardust, for ourselves, we were doing 10% of our sales was through the delivery and Uber Eats and Just Eat at the beginning of 2020. And then about March time, it was 90%. And now it's the equation has changed because we have learned some more stuff as well. But what I'm saying is that imagine if we were only relying on these aggregators, Deliveroo, Uber Eats, and Just Eat, and imagine if they then turn off, they're charging something like 32.5% or 35%. Yeah, wow. It's between 30 and 35%. And so, but then they have huge reach, and without them, the businesses would not have survived as well. So it's got plus and minus points, but there has to be a middle way. So then what happens is you open up another store and then there are no couriers for either of these aggregators because you're relying on their drivers. They can switch you off. So you are off the screen completely. And then what happens when your 90% of your business is supposed to come through the aggregators and they decide, not you, you're unaware of it, they decide somewhere sitting wherever that there are no couriers and for whatever reason they take you off offline, then what do you do? So you have to be very, very, very much on the ball and learn to do deliveries and other avenues yourself as well. Otherwise, you're doomed.
Wow. Peter, what's your view of this subject, please?
Oh, well, I'm very much of a similar opinion to Niloufar. The amount of money charged is unsustainable, in my view, for a restaurant with a normal costing structure. The only way it can work is to turn yourself into a dark kitchen, which turns you into a completely different business. So I think that there are some anomalies at the heart of delivery, which have got to be worked out. Because on the other side, as both George and Niloufar have said, there is huge demand for delivery. So how can the numbers be made to work, I think, is a challenge for the future, and particularly for the delivery companies, people who are doing the delivery itself. I wonder if I could just move the subject on a little bit and sort of talk about a little bit more about the future. But before we do that, just a note on Brexit. Because I've heard it's happening, or something's happening anyway. I don't know, George. Do you have any comments?
Well, yeah. I guess at the end of the day, a decision will be made one way or the other. It seems to be swinging from no deal to maybe a deal, maybe not a deal. It's going to affect us all, whatever happens. It's going to affect us. Whether we're going on a holiday or whether we're trying to build businesses, bringing product into the UK or sending it out into Europe. We all have to face up to this. It's very easy just to say it'll sort itself out. It won't just sort itself out. But I think the robustness of our importers and our exporters are, you know, again, they realise that they're going to have to change. A lot of work, preliminary work, has been done to be ready. Something will happen and we will all change. We've got to be strong negotiators. We've got to stand very firm with our customers. So if we have an added cost that's basically born from Brexit, we have to be very honest and very clear. I think what we have to be careful of those that try and capitalize a little bit more where it's not necessary. But I think that we just have to be firm and very clear. Not to compensate too much and try and swallow very thin margins. I think we just have to be very honest with our customer base and face up to this. It's going to be tough. It's going to cause a bit of difficulty. I think in January, we're already predicting late arrivals, poor quality produce. That's going to happen. I think we've just got to have our wits about us.
Niloufar, what can I mean for you?
So we started doing our Brexit analysis just recently when we had a tiny bit more of a bandwidth, really. And at the moment, our main supplier of the meat is very much UK-based, but we were having a conversation with him. This is the halal meat we get. And he said, so far, he does not see a problem, but then when... We don't know. He doesn't know himself. When it starts drying up in UK, the import that's coming from abroad, then what the current supplier would do, i.e. his wholesaler, would do to him, he says he doesn't know. And that's one of the product. And then there are several others. So from that point of view, the supply chain is something that is a worry. And personally, I don't think we can do at the moment a lot about it. I mean, our fresh produce, it'll be great. But to be speaking to George and others about that. But Brexit itself, it's something, it's still unknown. And we don't export anything. So from there, we don't get affected. We import, our supplies, a lot of it is imported. So we'll have to wait and see what happens on that one. But holiday-wise, there are beautiful places in UK. That's the least of our worry at the moment.
Yeah.
George's Farm, especially.
Is it true to say that for both Niloufar and Georgia perspective, there's a lot of uncertainty still?
Or
from Georgia's perspective, is that overstating the case?
No, it's not. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of nervousness. We have, with some of our customers, done some contingency planning. We've done a little bit of extra sourcing. I think we just have to be ready for whatever's ahead of us. It is very uncertain. It is still very uncertain. And I think, you know, it will affect different businesses. You know, UK farming is quite exciting in a sense that there's going to be more demand for British. I was talking to somebody yesterday who said, you know, we might even start to see more manufacturing being forced back into the UK, which won't be a bad thing. I'm not saying that's going to happen in January first week, but over time, I think we're going to have to start reflecting and look inside this brilliant island of ours and start using it for what we used to do. And I think that might force some more manufacturing businesses. Maybe that's a good thing.
Can I just come in? I think also, Peter, at the end of the day, it also has to be a mindset of the consumers as well. Like in our case, the money comes from the customers, from the consumers. So consumers need also, if there's a price change, et cetera, if the prices are going up, currently, if we go to any of the local suppliers, the prices are high of the produce as compared to, say, the wholesalers who are supplying us. And that will, in effect, the businesses will have to raise their prices. And then will the customer, at the end of the road, will they be happy paying it? So it's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of things we're still trying to see how it all pans out.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've got a couple of minutes left, and I really just got one sort of question I'd like to pose to both of our guests, and that is thinking about the future. What does success look like for you? George, go on.
What does success look like? I think success, in the minimum sense, is sustaining what we've got, holding on to what we've got. I think for me to look back in 12 months and say that we've successfully stayed running, obviously we're a bit more optimistic than that. But I think success is retaining our teams, retaining all the people that have supported us over this period. I think success is continuing to help feed the nation as cost effectively as possible, but giving the consumer in the end great value. And that just may look a little bit different to how it does today. But success is carrying on doing what we're doing and improving it.
And Niloufar, by all means, look forward the next year, but also the next 5 years, perhaps. What does success look like?
So, Peter, for me, success comes in many different colours. One is, as we would love Zabadas to be a mainstream brand in 5 years and beyond, and it's a legacy brand. We would love for that to happen. We would love Zabadas to grow as a second generation ethnic brand to become a mainstream big brand. So that in itself is a big success for us. And also to grow so that our own teams and the teams who have been with us, they can also reap the fruits of all the dedications and sincerity and loyalty that they have shown to the brand. So that in itself is a success. Also to have find Zabada's name alongside big names in the supermarkets and the travel hubs and airport. And this is all going, you know, the big, big, big vision to go UK and beyond. And that's success. But in the same time, very much keeping our existing team, taking them along with us to become a mainstream brand. And that's what, and finding a partner who can really propel us up. That's what success looks like.
That sounds like success. George, do you just want to put a 5-year perspective on success?
Yeah, I think our success will be building our online business. Inevitably, we see the market changing. So I would see in 5 years that we would be, let's say there's a big article in the Grocer that says, well, the company is called 44foods.com, if I plug it for a second. 44foods.com is a collaboration of a number of suppliers of great food, great fresh fish, fresh meat and fresh fruit and veg and larder goods. I think the success will be that we will be running deliveries nationwide and hopefully collaborating perhaps with some restaurants and some other food. I think Niafar and I will probably end up having a big chat after this because I think I've got great. Some ideas. I think she and I probably got a few ideas that we want to get our heads together. But, I've got some great ambition to build that sort of platform and give some of those other big chaps a bit of a run for their money, shall we say.
That's brilliant. And that's a really good point to finish this conversation. I'd really like to thank both George and Niloufar for participating, for being so forthcoming and creative in what you've said. And thank you very much. And if this was a room, I would be asking for a round of applause.
Well, thank you. Yeah, so, very good.
Max, can I hand over to you now?
No problem. Just let's keep George and Niloufar on just as we wrap up. Just to give you a bit of context from our perspective, that George, especially, on the Brexit subject. Tomorrow, Thursday, we're running a big Brexit broadcast at 2 o'clock with some pretty heavyweight industry individuals, and we're not trying to come up with solutions. We just want a debate as to where we are, and as Peter's intimated, what does success look like? How can we work through this? I don't know if any of you picked up on it, but earlier this week, George, Minor Weir and Willis were in the Grocer magazine saying about garlic, that they've got two containers of garlic on the water that were due to come into, I think it was Felixstowe, but the shippers aren't coming into the UK ports at the moment because of the amount of mass congestion, and that congestion has been caused by companies over ordering for Christmas and other dry goods or Christmas elements. But at Felixstowe, we've got a big problem. Felixstowe is only 40 minutes to the east of me, that there's 11,000 containers on the dockside full of PPE unused that the government rightly over-ordered, and that's taken up a third of the space at Felixstowe, so they can't get the containers in. So this ginger that was this company Minor Weir and Willis ordered is sat in Rotterdam, and they tried to get a lorry to go and pick it up and bring it in, and that would normally take under a day. But because it's George, you know better than I, because it's designated as sea freight, it can't go in a lorry, so it's got to come on sea back, but it's not due to come back for the next 3-4 weeks. And if you go into the likes of Sainsbury's, as I did last night, out of curiosity, you can buy ginger, but instead of £1.50 a piece, it's now £5 a piece. So we've seen a sharp escalation of prices in certain areas already. Before we went live on this broadcast, a contact from Holland phoned me, and they're big suppliers to the likes of Costco in the UK and do 22 large stores in the UK. And Costco is saying to them, what are you doing about Brexit? And this Dutch supplier is saying to them, what are you doing about Brexit? And Sainsbury's is also saying to that Dutch supplier, what are you doing about Brexit? And that Dutch supplier is saying to Sainsbury's, what are you doing about Brexit? So we do need clarity, try to be positive. You would hope that once we get through the machinations of early January, that will all clear out, so there will be some semblance of normality. That all aside, getting back to the subject today, Peter, I'm just so fascinated by these conversations. I've learned so much from both of our experts, and I can see how this revolution is occurring from the ground up with the likes of Niloufar and George, because of the disruption that they're creating. And Peter, unless you say otherwise, I'm presuming you're seeing this within other food service sectors, that people are resilient and they are changing and they are adapting. So there will be a brighter future for the food service sector come 2021 and beyond.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's been genuinely inspiring from what we've learnt this afternoon is coping with truly awful conditions that were totally unforeseen. both companies immediately pivoted in another direction. George's company pivoting to retail, Niloufar working with the NHS, you know, picking up opportunities. And then over the next few months, doing fabulous stuff like opening a CPU, thinking creatively, and then working with people and valuing people, employees, suppliers, and everybody else. And that's been really inspirational, I have to say, from this discussion. But it's what I also hear in generally going around the food service market. So I think there's tremendous hope for the future, really solid grounds. And I'm hoping that, using the word the industry, is able to really learn the lessons that it's learned, and use that as a platform for really good things in the future. I'm hopeful.
We've got a great contact in the States, Todd, who's been watching in. He's just stated, in the States right now, some food service operations are thinking that that by May of 2021, that the restaurant industry will start to explode, some claim by 200% pre-COVID numbers. So again, those companies that are resilient have created a difference and created a new foundation, may look to potentially explode positively come spring of next year. Everyone, we're just starting to run out of time, but we've got to end, and it's been a fascinating conversation, but we're definitely going to end on a positive note. Niloufar, if we were all going to come to yours for lunch, just quickly run us through the menu that you would select for us. If we said we're gonna have whatever you're gonna give us,
right.
we'll pay, of course. So Peter will pay.
What I would suggest is homemade paratas with chicken tikka and chicken seekh kebab with grilled halloumi and lettuce, cucumber, tomato, and red onions, and drizzled with tamarind and mango sauce. Those are the wraps. And then the biryani boxes will have your chicken biryani or the vegan biryani, and then there's a sauce that comes with it as well. And for dessert, I would recommend gulab jamuns. So those are there. And then the vegan products are fantastic. So I would recommend that.
Fantastic. George, Peter, I'll get the car. I'll pick you both up in 10 minutes and we'll go. George, what would you
lunch
recommend? George, what would you recommend for us to purchase from either Mudwalls or 44 Foods, please?
Well, I certainly from 44 Foods, I would definitely say let's get one of those brilliant Christmas boxes and all those lovely Christmassy things and start to sort of enjoy ourselves. From Mudwalls, I'd 100% say purple sprouting broccoli every time. It is sensational. As long as the asparagus season stays away till March or April, enjoy purple sprouting because it's just as good, actually a bit better.
Fantastic. Everyone, what a great note to leave on it. And just to say again, thank you very much for Total Produce PLC for being our partner on this, and for Peter Batman, our resident food service expert. Everyone, thank you very much. If we don't speak before, have a fantastic Christmas and keep safe. And we look forward to seeing the extreme positive growth of both of your businesses in 2021 and beyond.
Thank you. Season's greetings.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, everyone.
Bye-bye.